SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you going to do, Commissioner?
There's only one thing we can do.
Batman! Sir, it's the Batphone.
Yes, Commissioner.
Batman.
We'll be right there.
Bip, bam, pal.
Batman.
This is Batman Land.
Be careful. Maybe a trap.
Batman Land.
Each week, we chat about the 1966 Batman TV show.
We're Batman and Robin, the crime fighters.
We discuss the episodes that aired this week on SBS Viceland. My name is Dan Barris. I'm an editor here at SBS, and I'm joined here in a very empty, very lonely studio by my own personal boy wonder. It's Nick Bassine.
I'm not your professional boy wonder, your personal.
Personal boy wonder.
Right. Yeah, it is very chilly in here without a third guest, but I also, this is going to be more room to move around.
Exactly. I mean, you look around the Batcave, like there's a Batman, there's a Robin, there's no third person wandering around.
Oh, yeah. So you could do this show with two people.
Exactly, just two men standing around in capes and long johns.
Nothing could possibly go wrong.
No, anything can go right.
That's right.
Look on the bright side, that's what Batman would do.
I gotta go.
No, you're not going anywhere. No, right. We have three episodes of Batman to talk about this week.
Yeah, a three-parter. I've never been part of a three-parter. It was very exciting. There's a lot of Batman to get through.
Yeah, now I understand you've got a personal policy. If you're not on a podcast, you don't listen to it.
There's so much content today, these days, Dan. There's, with Netflix, they produce 700 bits of original content. I don't know if you realized that this year.
I watched it all.
So my time is stretched thin, but I listen to this podcast every week.
The Batman Land podcast.
That's right.
So you can talk to me extensively as to why there was a three-part episode last time?
Because it has something to do with the Olympics airing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That has got nothing to do with it. So as Batman fans would know, 2 weeks ago we screened another three-part Batman
Was it just 2 weeks ago?
Just 2 weeks ago. I know, it feels like so much longer. This is the word from Adam West. He'd said at some point the reason why there were three parts was because they had the idea that Batman, it's pretty popular around the world, we could edit together these three episodes and flog it off as a movie internationally. So
that was Adam West's idea.
Adam West said that that's why they did it.
All right.
Okay, so if you actually look at the episodes, that kind of makes sense because it's a little bit bigger and broader than the show traditionally is. Then you look at these three episodes, and I think it might be a bit more in line with what I suspect the real reason was for the three episodes a few weeks ago, which is that the producers are looking around saying, hey, look, ratings aren't really going so great. We don't have the hot show that we did. What can we do to try to rejuvenate interest in the program? And so you look at these three-part episodes, and I would say this is probably not the best way to really rejuvenate the interest.
I sensed a lot of things, but rejuvenation was not one of them.
No.
I mean, for one thing, this is just the same villains.
Yeah.
You think you'd have somebody a little bit more excited. Killer Croc, maybe.
Do you think Killer Croc would work in the 1966 Batman?
Well, they had something coming out of that cauldron. It looked like a little bit like Killer Croc.
That's a good point. We'll talk about him, because I think he's the MVP for this episode.
What is that?
Mortimer, say hello to Marsha.
Yeah, it was like Fraggle Rock all of a sudden. It was unbelievable. I just don't think this would have worked as a movie. I mean, some of the main characters disappear for 45 minutes.
Now, it's kind of strange that I'm talking so much depth about these three episodes, because honestly, I don't remember a single thing that happened.
You never do.
How do I keep losing track of this?
Weird. You're watching them, right?
I'm watching them. I should write some notes. Well. But Nick, please, can you please remind us what happened this week?
Okay, so Penguin is directing a movie with Marsha, Queen of Diamonds, and forces Batman and Robin to be in it.
Great acting job, Batman. You could run for senator or governor.
The movie's got some smut in it.
This is outrageous.
Robin gets way too upset during Batman's kissing scene with Marsha, Queen of Diamonds.
I'll bet you'll never want to kiss another girl as long as you live.
Penguin films a scene in the Antiquities Museum, which turns into an actual real-life fight, just like in a Christian Bale movie. Batman and Robin are easily captured, tied up, and catapulted across the city, but the Batmobile saves them. Batman and Robin make their way into Penguin's movie.
Lights, camera,
action!
Penguin also recruits the help of army personnel.
And you do think I have some acting ability, huh?
Oh, I think all generals do, sir.
But while they're thinking about how lucky they are not to be in Vietnam, Penguin steals a bunch of secret stuff.
Now, what would he want with them?
In armor.
What are you doing in those suits of armor, Batman?
It's a long story, Major.
Batman and Robin give chase, but Penguin easily knocks them down, gasses them, has them taken away by Jolly Jim's scrap metal.
It's lucky you think fast, Batman, or both of you would have ended up as paperweights.
Obviously, that's what Penguin intended when he put us inside your scrap truck.
Marcia does the dance of the seven veils to help Penguin steal a bunch of gold.
What could that mangy creature be doing in there?
Which he turns into a gold tank.
I saw a gold tank!
And murders Chief O'Hara, and everyone cheers. But Chief O'Hara's alive.
Never thought I'd see your face again, Batman!
Batman and Robin stop the tank with that Batzooka.
The Batzooka!
Batman donates the smutty footage from the Penguin's movie to some sort of group for boys.
So, Nick, yeah. I want to talk about your shirt. Now, I'm a bit of a distance away from you in the studio here, but I can see on your buttons here, it looks to me like every single one of these buttons has an R on it. Is that correct? Like R for Robin? It looks like the Robin logo from over here.
That is not correct.
It's just stitching, isn't it?
Yeah.
From a distance, it looks like you're a big fan of Robin.
That's pretty weird, imagining that I was such a big fan of Robin that I would wear a shirt with Robin buttons on it.
I thought with you knowing that you're my personal boy wonder, that maybe you were making the effort.
Well, I'm wearing the green tights. You would have thought that that would have been the first thing you noticed.
Yeah, but it's not even...
They're not that tight. Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. At the beginning, Batman and Robin rock up, and they're going to be a little late to the lecture at the Crime Prevention League.
Yeah, who's involved in this Crime Prevention League? Who are these people?
Yeah, and are Batman and Robin being paid for their appearance there, or is this pro bono work?
To be fair, I think every episode, Batman and Robin are invited to some loser convention.
Yeah, speaking of losers, Chief O'Hara is on the scene pretty quickly after this.
Oh, man.
Now, can I ask you a question about police work? Like, you're not a detective as far as I'm aware.
Well.
Like, you've never been a member of the law enforcement community.
Not yet, no.
Not yet. I mean, it's a matter of time. Chief O'Hara comes out and is like, guys, what are you doing? The Penguin has a legal right to be here. He got the permits required. Like, if he wants to film in the street here, like, he's certainly entitled to. I've got a question. Just 2 weeks ago, he was putting the Penguin behind bars. Was there no concern about suddenly the fact the Penguin's A, not in jail, and B, applying for a permit to be filming on the streets? Like, is that even a consideration? Like, surely that's probably reason enough not to give him a permit at least. But further to that, why is Chief O'Hara, once the Penguin's applying for this permit, like a city mandated bit of paperwork that he needs, why is he not getting on the phone to Batman and Robin, to that red phone that flashes in the Batcave and says, hey guys, just a heads up, if you see Penguin around, he may be filming something on the streets. We couldn't stop him. He's got a legal right to do this, but maybe he's up to something.
Let's say Penguin files that paperwork, presumably under his real name, Oswald Cobblepot.
Oswald Pengy Cobblepot.
Yeah. Let's say that comes through to whoever it has to go through, whatever channels it has to go through. Who is being turned down if the Penguin is allowed to file that paperwork? Like, what is going on? What is the process for getting a permit? Can anybody get one?
Well, I mean, seemingly so. Can I ask a question? Just because we're now talking about the Penguin's real name here. As you said, his real name is Oswald Cobblepot.
Right.
Okay. He goes by the name of Penguin. Okay. The police call him Penguin as well.
That's right.
Okay. The narrator of the show calls him Penguin.
Yeah.
You and I call him Penguin.
That's right.
Are we all complicit in allowing him to fall into this mental psychosis that he has, where he sees himself as a penguin? He waddles around the place. No man should be waddling around the place.
Does waddle. Well, now you're getting into the whole, is Batman responsible for the creation of these supervillains?
Well, I mean, he's certainly complicit as we are.
Because if he didn't exist, maybe Oswald Cobblepot would just be an eccentric chain smoker.
Yeah, or you'd be like a legitimate filmmaker. Instead, he feels that he needs to tie his craft, his prowess behind the camera, into some sort of crazy scheme where he's building like gold tanks.
I know. He could have been Terrence Malick or maybe Otto Preminger.
So the Penguin opens a film studio. Penguin Studios Incorporated. He's the president of the film studio.
How do they keep letting him be a legitimate businessman? He was opening restaurants the other week, and now he's starting a studio, a production company. What the hell's going on? He's a criminal.
I know.
He's got a record. He's got a rap sheet.
And like, surely he has to get a loan for some of these businesses that he's launching.
Yeah, where's he getting the money? That office is huge.
I mean, part of the reason that the Queen of Diamonds, Marsha, gets brought into the episode is that he does need some money to bankroll his studios. But bear in mind, like, he's already put a fair bit of money into the studios that I don't think a few diamonds is going to cover the cost of. Remember, he picks up the phone and he goes through three different departments, including publicity.
I kind of like that bit.
How he's got a publicity department set up yet for a film slate which doesn't exist yet, I find very concerning.
It's very strange.
How does that happen?
Can I just say that I believe that Carolyn Jones,
Morticia Adams,
yes, is criminally underused in these three episodes.
Okay, so this is one of my big bugbears with this episode. She's made her second appearance in this. Previously, she was in an episode where she was going to get married to Batman.
Yeah.
Look up that episode. It's fantastic.
I'm for it.
The marriage gets stopped. Like, there's a, like in The Graduate.
Harriet interrupts it, right?
Aunt Harriet comes in and she's like, I'm Batman's first wife.
Yeah.
Very funny stuff. But in that episode, Marsha, Queen of Diamonds, wasn't treated like a sex pot in the way that she is in this one. Like, every opportunity is taken here to really amp up the fact of, this is a sexy lady, guys. Right, right, right. There's the moment where she comes out to the film set where she's naked behind the towel or whatever the like thing that those other ladies are holding up around her. There's no reason for her to be naked on the set. As far as I know, she's not even filming a scene. There's the Dance of the Seven Veils. There's the way she's sitting seductively during scene 43, where she's supposed to be kissing Batman.
Well,
a scene which is so hot that Aunt Harriet ends up having to come out as a representative of the Gotham City League of Film Decency, which, I mean, I'm surprised we haven't heard about her involvement with membership in that group before.
They were reading a script earlier on, and Batman and Robin were blushing, and Robin couldn't take his eyes off the page. Was it just the kissing scene?
Yeah, I think that's scene 43. The eroticism of that scene.
Think of the children.
I am thinking of the children, madam.
So I noticed that she was very sexualized. What if my take is it's refreshing to see an older woman allowed to be sexy?
Was Carolyn Jones really that old?
She looks like she's in her 50s, maybe. No?
Let's find out. Computer, how old was Carolyn Jones?
In 1967, Carolyn Jones was 37 years old.
37 years old, Nick. She was 37. I'm 37. Am I too old to be dating Batman?
Okay, I apologize. I retract. She was clearly not an older woman. I don't know what I was thinking. But I just thought that she had already, it seemed like she'd already had her career. So I assumed, like as Morticia Adams, I thought she was later in life.
She's a Hollywood actress, Nick. You're not permitted roles past the age of 38. It's like Logan's Run out there. But no, there is a massive discrepancy between how she's treated in those initial episodes, where she really is one of the better villains, I think. I really quite enjoyed her, as I recall.
Yeah, I think maybe it would have made a bigger difference if she was given a lot more to do and it wasn't just the sexy stuff she was doing.
Mm.
Because she's really charismatic and she's very funny. And I mean, the character is completely pointless. If there's anything good about the character, she's delivering it. Carolyn Jones is. So maybe, yeah, if she had had more to do, it would have seemed less egregious.
Yeah, absolutely.
I trust you're going to enjoy this scene, Batman, darling.
I made a bargain with Penguin, and I never break my word.
Bargain? Why, half the men in the world would fight to be kissed by Marsha, Queen of Diamonds.
They certainly wouldn't have to fight me.
What an appalling lack of enthusiasm, darling. But don't worry. I have enough enthusiasm for both of us.
But we do know from the kissing scene that took place, scene 43, it must have been some pretty vigorous kissing because Bruce is needing a chapstick shortly after.
I can't imagine how much kissing you would have to do to noticeably need that much chapstick.
Look, I can tell you how much, but that's for another podcast.
That's right. Save it for the good fight. What was interesting is that I watched the episodes with my son. It worked for him. He's 7 years old and the sight of people kissing makes him physically sick.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how gross are girls?
It's not so much girls as the adults kissing.
Yeah.
He hates it.
Oh, look, I hate it as well.
Yeah. I bet. He laughed at whenever there was a joke about stop the kissing or whatever. He thought all that stuff was hilarious.
Now, your son, because you do mention watching the show with him sort of semi-regularly on here. At the beginning, he did not understand Batman. He found it all very confusing because you've led him to watch the older, like the more mature Batman films.
He has been desensitized because he's watched the real hard-hitting, fast modern stuff.
He's watched Ben Affleck like break some dudes.
Yeah.
So how's he treating Batman now? So he's gotten over the shock of seeing The Bright Knight. Like, is he enjoying the show a little bit more now, or is it a chore to sit down with his dad watching it?
He likes to watch it, but he doesn't have fun. He gets easily distracted. And whenever Batman and Robin get into trouble, I say, do you think they're going to make it out of this? And he rolls his eyes and says, yeah, of course they are.
Is there a moment where he gets distracted by something obviously more exciting around the place? And you're like, son, sit down. You must watch this now.
Well, if my other child starts asking for Paw Patrol, he would go with Paw Patrol. More visually stimulating.
Who chooses Paw Patrol over Batman? Know, what sort of weird children are you raising there?
It's very strange.
The other week, I don't have kids, so I can't really relate to that. But I was, because we watched these episodes a couple of weeks before the episodes air. But last week I was watching the TV and it was the Catwoman two-part episode. And you were with me on the episode, as I recall.
Catwoman, you say?
Catwoman. You know, she's a lovely lady. Rings she's, bell. You know, steals stuff.
Yes, yes. I remember that episode, episodes.
At the very end, she's about to jump off the side of the building.
Yeah,
and
kill herself.
Kill herself.
Suicide.
And she's asking Batman, like, is there anything you can do to save me? Will you marry me? And Batman's willing to do anything except that. And like that scene's coming on. I'm like, Sarah, you've got to watch this scene. And the scene comes up. I'm roaring on the couch laughing. And she's like, this is the stupidest show ever.
Now, do listeners of the show know who Sarah is? That she's your probation officer.
It is my probation officer.
Yeah. That was a great scene. I am getting more and more annoyed at Batman turning down just wonderful women for marriage and kissing and whatever is called for. It just seems silly.
Well, why get takeout when you've got a great roast at home named Robin?
That is disgusting.
It really
is suggesting disgusting. He's cooking him.
Probably pre-cooked.
Good God. I think I've asked this question before because you're an expert on show business.
Showbizologist is the professional title.
What do people smoke now when they're smoking in movies or on TV versus what they smoked then? Like, is Burgess Meredith smoking real cigarettes?
I mean, I'm not really too sure. I wouldn't really sort of assume. I mean, maybe he's a smoker, maybe he's not. These days, there's some sort of like herb cigarette that gets used in movies to fake it. But you don't really see smoking in movies very often.
No, not that much. It's very weird. It's very noticeable when you see it now.
Yeah, really stands out. Hey, there's probably a couple of key moments in these episodes to run through. Let's talk. What are your three like key moments in the episode?
So definitely Aunt Harriet noticing that Bruce's lips are chapped.
Yeah.
Oh, Bruce, your lips are terribly chapped.
It's a mild case of windburn, Aunt Harriet. You see, this afternoon, Dick and I took an open bus tour through the Wayne Animal Sanctuary.
Well, I'm going to get you some salve for those lips, just in case a pretty girl wants to kiss you.
First of all, people don't go around noticing that other people's lips are chapped in real life. And for them to do that, they would have to be seriously mangled, I would think. Like, oh, I would never tell you your lips are chapped. I mean, we're colleagues and we're not.
Yeah.
I'm not slightly your aunt.
Awkward.
The monster in the cauldron, whatever the hell that was. And of course, flying through the sky, catapulted, just kind of somersaulting Batman and Robin.
Look, I mean, I think that is the key moment in this episode. I really enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed seeing them flipping around through the sky.
And they're getting out of whatever has tied them up while flipping around.
While also organizing for the Batmobiles to travel across the street.
Oh, my God.
Automated like it's a Tesla, just driving through the streets of Gotham.
So in some 60s era contraption that Batman would have, he was punching out the address where he needed the Batmobile to meet him.
Yeah.
Mulberry Street or whatever.
Probably was Mulberry Street.
I was hoping that they would land seated into the front seats.
That's what I expected would happen.
And then there was a net.
Yeah, which makes more sense because of, you know, physics and the health of
their
well-being.
How did that net work exactly? It came out of the car.
Like the front or the back, wherever their boot is, like flung out a net.
And did they bounce at all or did they just kind of land in the net and then stop?
Bounced in it. It's kind of like in Lethal Weapon when they jump off the building and they land in a...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something. I don't think I'd seen anything like that in this show before.
No, and I thought that was amazing. I was really into that scene.
They would have been flying over the city, like over buildings.
Yeah, which means it's a pretty impressive catapult.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the scenes I really enjoyed was the moment where Batman is trying to convince the Penguin that he's really interested in being like good. In cinema.
That was funny.
So he goes off quietly where he knows he's being recorded by the Penguin. And he's talking about how he's got this taste for movies now and he can't let it go. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, who are you, Batman? You've become like Joe Hollywood.
Yeah. Whenever Batman goes modern lingo.
And he does call Robin baby.
Yeah, whenever he calls anyone baby, that is gold. Very funny.
There's a line, which wasn't really one of my favorite moments, but I did enjoy Robin making a reference about Batman's acting abilities and said you could run for senator, governor, and obviously an allusion to Ronald Reagan,
as we discussed in the show. And that's not the first time that they've made an allusion to Ronald Reagan.
But it's one of these weird throwaway jokes that I'm sure was hilarious back in 67.
Why do they change the name of the Pentagon to the Hexagon? Is that in and of itself, that's just supposed to be funny by itself like that?
I think so. Thought that was a bit weird. The other thing that I really enjoyed and like my third favorite thing was the casting of the two army guys. Yeah. Like, do you know who they were?
I know who one of them was and I was pretty impressed. And the other guy has been in 5 million things, but I didn't really recognize him.
Bob Hastings was the younger guy. Now, Bob Hastings is notable in Batman lore as being Commissioner Gordon in the 1990s Batman cartoon.
I thought that was very interesting. Is it just any early association with Batman just gives you kind of Batman juice, Batman credit to be a little bit. Other shows?
Well, I mean, think about Bob Hastings as well. He was primarily a voice actor.
There's rarely a day that you don't think about Bob Hastings.
Yeah.
Bob Hastings.
When you are thinking about him, clearly.
Yeah.
If you look at his filmography, like he did appear in so many cartoons over the years. He'd also been in a bunch of superhero stuff. I think he was Superman in one of the Superman cartoons.
Okay.
And obviously Clark Kent as well if he's Superman. So he did that. I think he was already in a Batman cartoon at some point. So when it came for the Batman cartoon, the 90s casting, like he would have been pretty top of mind, I would assume.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But I'd say that his affiliation with having been in the 60s Batman was probably pretty appealing to the producer of the Batman cartoon.
I guess those producers would have grown up on this, like a lot of us, grown up on the show and thought it was super cool that they were in it. And
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the Batman cartoon is that it's one of the real first sort of fan projects of people who'd grown up watching a TV show who then went off to make like another version of that show.
You're talking about the 90s one.
Yeah.
After.
So, I mean, these are all kids that grew up watching the 60s Batman and then they're in their 30s and 40s and get the chance to do a Batman cartoon show. So, you know, it's definitely drawing upon their youth.
I'm curious about how an actor like him turns into a big voice actor. Like what that transition is like and what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The other thing as well, cast-wise, is the guy that's appearing with him. That's Alan Reed.
Yeah.
Now, Alan Reed, as far as animation go, like he's one of, you know, the big guys. He's Fred Flintstone.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
One of Alan Reed's lines is when he's trying to rally the troops when Penguin's robbing the place.
Sorry, who? Oh, Pengy.
Pengy, sorry. He says, remember Grant and Lee and Teddy Roosevelt charging up San Juan Hill? Now, Robert E. Lee is a traitor.
Yeah.
He's a traitor to the United States. So I found that kind of stood out. And I was trying to remember, do people invoke his name? He was the leader of the Confederacy, a Confederate general during the Civil War. Those people were all traitors.
Yeah. The statue of him, obviously a contentious issue in the last couple of months.
Yeah. All right. So he must, so he's still heralded as a fantastic dude.
Yeah. I think that's what that statue away, though. I think that's how that story came to a conclusion.
It featured prominently in these episodes.
Call the cavalry!
So we haven't had any cavalry since 1910.
No. Well, we'll call the army!
Yes. Sir, we are the army.
Well, get some men up here. Don't just stand there.
Yes, sir. Men.
So in the other Marcia, Queen of Diamonds episodes, Aunt Hilda, everyone assumes she's just Marcia's patsy and she gets to go back to her teaching job. Same thing happens in these episodes. I mean, she's a criminal.
Yeah, but she's also over the age of 38 in Hollywood, so just give her a break. All right. Nick, very briefly, this is the first time it's just been the two of us here in the Batman Land Cave together.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to ask you, who's your Batman?
Oh.
I know, you never thought you'd be asked.
Oh, God. It's a difficult question to answer, as a lot of people have discovered on the show, because I have never felt so exhilarated by any superhero before or since watching Michael Keaton be Batman in 1989. But I certainly enjoy watching Christian Bale jump around and be more acrobatic. So I think when I think about who my Batman is, I think about the modern one.
Yeah. I mean, Lewis Wilson from the 1943 serial, obviously top of mind.
L. Dubs, as he was known, he was a quintessential Batman.
Yeah.
He had the floppy ears.
The weird thing is, the more time that I'm spending watching the 60s Batman is doing Batman Land, I'm really leaning towards Adam West as the guy that I think of immediately.
Well, you have probably spent a lot more time now at this point with Adam West than you have with any of the other Batmans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in terms of like hours counted.
Yeah.
I mean, once you've watched like six episodes of Batman, you've already passed Michael Keaton and Val Kilmer and pretty much all the movie Batman.
Yeah. That's why we do it.
Nick, each week we learn some amazing lessons from the Batman TV show. What did you take away from this week?
Well, this week, because of all the smuttiness going on with the kissing and the filming, I think it's Bruce Wayne that says it, or is it Batman? I forget. But he says,
decency is everybody's business, Penguin.
Decency is everybody's business. And that could not be more true. As soon as we lay down our guard and let what is effectively pornography out into the world.
Scene 43.
Yeah, scene 43. As soon as we let the scene 43s of the world take over, I mean, that's when the dominoes start to fall.
Yeah, I took away a very important health lesson this week, which is if you need some vitamin B in your life, a toad is pretty much the equivalent of 2 days' worth of vitamin B that you need.
All right, thanks, Anne Hilda.
Yeah, she really delivered for us on that one.
Wonderful.
That brings us to the end of another Batman Land for another exciting week. Nicholas Bessine, people probably have conversations they want to have with you online. Where do they do that?
You can ask me all of your queries at Nick Bessine.
People can find me on the Twitter at the Dan Barrett. If you're enjoying Batman and you want to talk about it online, use the hashtag BatmanLand. Helps people engage and converse about the show. If you've been enjoying this podcast, you can find my co-host here, Nick, and also Fiona Williams, who's regularly on the Batman Land as well. The two of them host their own podcast. It's called The Playlist. They discuss art and culture and movies and TV.
You do another podcast, don't you, Dan?
Yeah. Did I say what the name of your podcast was?
I think so.
I did. The Playlist.
Yeah.
It's quite good. Subscribe to it now.
What about your other podcast?
I'm doing another podcast here at SBS as well. It's called The Good Fight, SBS Fan Podcast. Greatest name in podcasting, let
Rolls
me tell you.
Right off the tongue.
Really does. Don't struggle with that every week talking about it on the pod. But anyway, if you like The Good Fight, check out that podcast. Part of what we love about the show as well is those interesting stories that inform the program. It sounds really boring when I talk about it.
Oh, no, I love it. I can't wait.
Don't be like that. You're not on podcast. You don't even listen to it. Anyway, folks, this has been another Batman Land. We'll be back next week. Same Batman Land time, same Batman Land channel. Na, na, na.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organization a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.